So that was it, our first iPhone event together.
We have talked about many iPhone events via text message, but never via podcast. So this is a new thing for us, I suppose.
And it's full circle since we did get a WWDC. So we've talked about the software. Let's talk about the hardware.
Sounds good.
The first thing I will note is that everything leaked in advance.
Like all of it.
Yeah. I mean, like there were some slight mistakes about certain things, but also the correct information leaked. Like, it was just like, oh, are they really going to call it the XR? Like, aren't they going to call it the 9? You know, there were multiple takes, but like the real information was all out there. And so nothing surprising happened.
It was two devices being updated with new hardware. And that was that. And I knew what devices they were going to be. Even though I wanted in my heart of hearts an iPad Pro update, I'll wait for like a month and probably get that too.
Yeah, in a way, I'm almost more excited for the next month event that must be happening because
right.
There's so much other stuff that has to launch this year. And there were only two product lines in this keynote, which I did think gave it a lot of focus, and they focused it right from the beginning. Tim referred to it as two of their most personal products, the ones that are always on us and what have you. And that is all that we got from this keynote. That said, I think there's some pretty exciting stuff for the two of us. Why don't we just go through it like we do?
Yeah, lead the way.
So the keynote began with this video, with this Mission Impossible video, with either real or very closely ripped off Mission Impossible music and this Apple employee running through campus doing a secret mission. And I thought that was a pretty interesting sort of take on what they were revealing, because it's all these personal high-tech gadgets that go on your body, and it is kind of Mission Impossible style spy gear, like in a certain sense, or like maybe that's not the best way of putting it, but you know, gadgets like James Bond Q gadgets. This is kind of an interesting way of just like stepping right in and owning up to that being what it is gadgetry. It seems a little bit like a departure to me from sort of more personal, intimate, you know, almost not technological ways of relating to these devices. Like now they're just going for it and it's all secret agent stuff.
Which kind of makes sense for an iterative year, right? If you're just,
sure,
quote unquote, just updating some stats and pieces of tech behind the hardware, then you might as well show why every little detail is cool and a fun update, as opposed to doing all of the evocative, this makes you a better, more beautiful human kind of stuff that you might typically think that Apple will provide.
Yep, I think you're right. And I think it worked. The one other tidbit before getting into products was that they're approaching 2 billion iOS devices sold, which is just unbelievable. You know, like that's the scale people talk about Facebook at, right? Like 2 billion-ish people on Facebook. And that, you know, is sort of seen as like a global empire. And I would say 2 billion iOS devices, though, of course, not all of them are in active use, but
it's quite a few.
That is a significant reach for the importance of this technology.
You might have missed this since you are not on Twitter, capitals for all of those words.
True.
That, did you know that there was a weird tweet that went out right before the video that was masterfully done?
No idea.
Tim Cook tweeted, "No, who can get it here quickly?" And it looked like it was a, you know, DM gone awry, sent into the public Twitter world accidentally.
That's awesome.
And everyone was freaking out and saying, what could that possibly be for? And of course, it was for the video.
Oh, nice. Yes.
I'm sure that that was like pre-planned quite a bit in advance. But I did like that the year where there were a bunch of gotcha scoops, Tim Cook managed to trick everyone in thinking that they found another, because he tweeted it and then like immediately deleted it. But of course, everyone picked up on it and was talking about what it might be that was forgotten.
Clever.
And it was all just part of the video. So I did appreciate that it seemed like it genuinely tricked 100% of people. And then the video began.
I'm impressed. That's like unusually sort of savvy and advanced of them. And also has an interesting kind of mixed reality quality
to it.
Yeah, it does. Which goes with some of the stuff that they would later show.
So the Apple Watch.
Yeah. So the first thing they revealed today is Apple Watch Series 4, which of course they didn't reveal today because they leaked it to somebody like 2 weeks ago and we've all seen it. Here are the highlights of Apple Watch Series 4 as Apple presented them. And then we can talk about what we think the highlights are. The first thing, and I don't think this is terribly surprising, is that Apple Watch is now the number one selling watch in the world. That's what you get when you sell 2 billion iOS devices, is the attachments become very popular.
That's right. I mean, it is one of those things where, of course it is, because what other watch would be the number one selling watch in the world? Like, there isn't one model that everyone thinks is so rad that you have to buy one. But of course, when you've sold so many iPhones and there's this complimentary device, of course people are going to buy it. That being said, I mean, that's no small feat. It's pretty crazy that a few years into deciding they're going to make watches, they are making the number one watch in the world. But still, I don't even know what the number two watch could possibly be. I would have no idea.
I bet it's some like $6 watch,
right?
It's probably like the most basic possible like conception of a watch. And so instead of that, what Apple's got here is new case sizes, new hardware that is the first time that's happened. It's the first time that the Apple Watch has changed form factor. But I mean, it looks familiar still. It doesn't really break from the design. It just sort of realizes it more fully, I think. But it also brings it into sort of the iPhone X era, the edge-to-edge curved corner screen era. So now the watch has entered that sort of generation of Apple products as well.
Which is kind of a fun back and forth between these two devices, because the OLED screen was on the watch before the iPhone, right?
That's right, from the beginning.
But then, of course, it was that square, which they hid pretty well by making most everything with a black background. Mm-hmm. But now that they're doing these beautifully curved edge screens, it makes total sense to bring it to this device, which has a similar shape for its face, and it looks really cool, John.
Yes, it does.
Like, I really, really like it, and I really want one very badly.
I like that they took advantage of the corners in a way that I wasn't really thinking about. I sort of did imagine that they would do this, that they would have that same rounded corner design, but I didn't think about how they could use the corners for displaying data the way that they did. They've added sort of corner complications on the new watch face that they created that really take full advantage of the screen real estate. And there are some compromises with a watch that's a rectangle, given that, you know, analog watch faces are circles. A lot of people call for, Apple's never going to do this, obviously, but a lot of people call for Apple to make a round watch because that's how watch information is presented. And the inscribed circle in a rectangle design that they've been dealing with before has had some space constraints, and they really have fleshed out how the information displayed by Apple Watch fits into a display that's sort of their flagship design now. It is really appealing. So stats-wise, the cases have gone to 40 and 44 millimeters, respectively, which is 2 millimeters larger in both cases. Little more than 30% larger screens for both the small and large watch models. One thing that they did before they started introducing the hardware was they came up with one of those classic Apple three areas of features,
right?
You know, like the iPhone one had at the very beginning. For the Apple Watch at generation 4, they've defined it as staying connected, living an active life, and managing your health, which I find really confusing because I don't see what the difference between the second two are. But okay, so staying connected, like the sort of communication stuff, the notification stuff, everything computer-like, everything phone-like about the device has been combined into one. And then all of the fitness and health stuff has been expanded into two somehow to make three. The hardware has changed a lot to support
healthy stuff.
But also they mentioned that the new back, so all of the watches have ceramic backs now, and they mentioned specifically that that makes it more permeable to radio waves. So the connectivity is going to be better, probably especially the cellular reception, I would imagine Wi-Fi too, are going to be better as a result of this new design. But the real reason they did this is so that they could fit better health sensors in the back. And it's ceramic and sapphire on all models. That means like aluminum and steel, and you know, like all of the cases have the same ceramic and sapphire back, which are the two sort of premium materials that they've been using Like the last generation's editions were made of ceramic.
Do you know what the back of the aluminum watch has been up until this point?
I'm pretty sure it's still aluminum except for the glass part.
Okay.
Like the whole back is ceramic now. Like there's a black rectangle with this sapphire in the center of it.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So it's a that's a like dramatic improvement in terms of materials for performance. And I imagine it'll also look really nice. So that's sort of the hardware changes. The crown has also gotten, apparently there must be some new hardware that make it possible for the crown to provide haptic feedback, which sounds great, actually. When you scroll through a list, the crown is going to physically click at you as you scroll through things. And I hadn't really thought about it, but as soon as they mentioned that feature, I realized that every day I scroll way past where I'm trying to scroll on the watch.
And now you won't.
Because you're just sort of twirling the thing, and now you're going to feel it. And that seems like a great improvement.
The button beside the crown didn't change, though. I thought I had assumed that that would become a haptic button like the old iPhone buttons.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't hear anything about that. Did you?
No, I guess not. No, I don't think it did.
Which is kind of a bummer.
That seems like an inevitable thing, yeah. But it hasn't happened yet.
That button of mine gets sticky. And like yep. Hard to push.
Mine too.
And I would like that yep. Not to be the case anymore. But I guess I'll wait for Series 5 for that little problem to be yep. Fixed.
I'm sure they'll get there. So other hardware changes. There is the speaker is better. The mic has moved to the other side from the speaker, which seems like a good idea.
Yeah.
And then the sensors on the back. There's now a new electrical sensor for heart rate, so you can get an electrocardiogram. And they said something about it being industry first or something. I mean, it's definitely not the case that this is the first EKG thing you can wear on your wrist. But I guess what they would probably mean is that it's the first smartwatch, the first like consumer wearable computer that has one.
Because what else would you get? Would the other ones be on the wrist, or would that be like something on your chest? Or I've never really
I think there are like dedicated expensive medical devices that you can wear on your wrist.
Yeah. It would not be a pleasant fashion forward thing, but no. You could certainly have it.
Nor would you be able to an emoji to people.
Right. Yeah, that would not be the feature of the other ECG models, but yeah I understand.
So that's like the obvious stuff. The performance is twice as good, apparently, with the new system on a chip.
The red dot is now a red ring, which is much less terrible looking to me.
That is a welcome change. They still insist on making a color choice for everyone who wants cellular, but at least it's a subtle one this time. One thing that I was terrified about with the case size changes is that the bands... the old bands will not fit. However, and I quote Jeff Williams, all band colors and styles fit any generation of Apple Watch. That sounds like a promise to me.
Right.
That like they will fit the future generations of Apple Watch.
Well, and also that whatever the new bands are that are coming out now with the new watch will fit the old ones.
Yeah.
So obviously they must be the same size. And I don't really know exactly what that means, but I mean, it can't possibly be that the new bands somehow stick out of the old watch, or the old bands somehow are shrunken inside of the, you know, the holding slots. So I'm assuming they figured out a way to just make them all uniform.
Well, I was staring at my Series 3 watch at the lug, whatever you call the point where the band goes into the case. I was staring at it after he said that, and I realized that it does sort of have this taper that looks like it has like an infinite curve.
Right.
Like you can imagine like a curve, the curve of the case extending out of that forever, so that maybe the band occupies a smaller portion of the bottom of the case, but it still like has a seamless line. And so I believe them. And I hope that that is what they meant by phrasing it exactly that way, that all band colors and styles fit any generation of Apple Watch. I hope that that is something they designed in from the get-go. And it's not like it can change that much more.
That counts at least a few more.
Yeah, a few more years at least, yes. But it's not like the size is going to change that many more times, right? Like they're not just going to keep expanding up your wrist. Like
no.
At a certain point, like that's the biggest you'd ever want your watch to be, or the smallest.
There will not be an Apple Watch Max, so I think you're good. You're good to go.
Yeah, I think so.
And I mean, with the amount of bands that they are creating, they really seem to highly promote the concept that you're going to own many of these bands and swap them out a lot.
Yeah.
And that's even the fun of the Apple Watch. As someone who used to try to swap out bands on my analog watch, it was a real pain. But on the Apple Watch, it's not.
Yep.
And so it makes sense to have a dozen or so of the Apple Watch bands. I think you might have more than a dozen or so.
I probably have about a dozen.
Okay, good, good. But yeah, it would be bad form for them to have made you purchase a bunch of these accessories and then say, hey, surprise, this year, this update doesn't work with any of your bands anymore. Buy them all over again. Especially because you can't.
Yep.
Because the colors change all the time. There's not, the same ones aren't always available, which is kind of part of the fun to me.
Right, yeah, me too. It's like, you know when the orange one was from. So there goes that excuse for me for not getting one of these. And now let's talk about the stuff that is really the most appealing about watchOS to us, which is faces and complications.
Oh man, there's some good new faces on here.
There really are. Do you want to take a crack at describing the big new face?
Well, are you talking about the modular ones?
So there's two. So what they referred to the first one, the one that was in the product chat that leaked, the analog one with the tons of complications, as the new watch face.
Okay.
They said one new watch face. Whereas the modular, the changes to modular, they described as a redesign of modular.
Okay.
Which I was disappointed when they said one new watch face, because I thought that meant there wasn't going to be a digital watch face that was that information dense. But it turns out that the modular redesign does actually add a complication, because they added a little date, like the narrow text date line complication that already exists on other faces above the time in the top right. They added that to the modular, so you still get the one in the row with the time, you get the big one in the middle, and then you get the three on the bottom, and then there's an additional one now. So that's amazing. That will make me want to use modular again, because I've been using the Siri face for a while.
In the Infograph watch face, which seems to be what they're calling it, the all-new one, is wild. I mean, that's a lot of stuff going on one screen, and I'm really into it. I can't really ever see myself using a analog looking watch face. I just prefer the time digitally myself.
Yeah, same.
But it's a lot. It's a lot of stuff at once, and I really love how much it is to just look at.
I feel like I would still use this. So basically what it is there's, and I don't think we should do the like tech nerd podcast thing where we go through every single like position on this watch and face and describe what all the complications are.
I mean, yeah, there's four in the middle.
Yeah.
There's four on the edges, and then there's some stuff just around the ring as well.
That's actually pretty cool. The thing where your appointments, like your calendar events, appear on the clock at the time that they are happening, even like though it's an analog face, you know, like at that point around the clock, that's where the events show up. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I would use that. This is also the one that we were describing earlier, where the corners, the complications that are curved into the corners, that makes it possible for them to display a good amount of information with the curve.
Because before, there was no screen.
Right. There was just no screen there. Exactly. I don't think I would use this as like my daily watch face, because I can't, I just would prefer to read the time digitally, but I would totally use this as my app launcher face and maybe use a couple of them because you can pack every single app that you could possibly use for something into one face now. And that's already kind of how I use my extra watch faces, as this one is my workout apps, and this one is my meditation apps, and this one is my travel apps. And I'll have multiple faces of I have, for example, multiple modular faces, because I have them configured for different activities that have multiple, where I use multiple apps. And the reason I use modular is because it's got the most apps. This has way more than that. So I can imagine using it the way, and that's how they showed it off too. They had different designs that they, you know, because you can change the color of the face, also make them look very visually distinct from each other. And then you can pack it with all of the apps that you use for a particular thing. And that seems to me to be like a way, the dock and the app picker in watchOS are kind of frustrating ways to launch apps.
They're not great.
And I think this is much better. Like, if you can have a couple watch faces that kind of cover everything, that seems like a much more, much quicker way to go with less mental overhead about, okay, what is this in my dock or not? And like, you know, what is the alphabetical name of this app? You know, this sort of serves as a like a dock.
And then there's another face that is of pertinent interest to you, I believe.
Oh yeah, definitely. So I don't know. I am using multiple apps on my quote unquote meditation watch face. Breathe is certainly one of them, but I also have a timer and stopwatch complication. And then I have the app Health Face that I use to manually enter mindfulness minutes. If I'm doing like a 30 or 45 minute sit, I'm just using the regular timer because that way I can leave it on do not disturb and it will still go off. And then I enter the mindfulness minutes manually. I don't just use Breathe. But the Breathe Face has three options for sort of pleasing graphics, like the way the Breathe app guides you to breathe. There's three different ways to do it, and it's set in this minimal analog watch face. And when you raise your wrist with this face, it starts a breathe session immediately, and I imagine just keeps it going until you lower it or something, or maybe it does your default number or whatever your last number of breaths was. That is pretty cool. I mean, if nothing else, I hope it gets more people to do mindfulness, you know, like we can always hope for that. And it is kind of a nice minimal watch face.
I think it's really pretty. It's very cool. That is, you actually gave me a recommendation for a more serious, maybe meditation app, which I think is just called Meditate.
Yep.
And that's what I've been using as a little complication on my watch face. But it's not very pretty. And boy, oh boy, are these watch faces pretty. And I don't know if that necessarily would change things, but I guess I'm just glad that they exist because they're cool.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really fun thing that they're constantly, I guess I'm just happy that every once in a while there are Apple features that I think are rad that the rest of the world doesn't seem to think is rad, and then they just get pushed into oblivion, never to be updated ever again.
Yeah.
And Breathe is the opposite, where it is just getting a ton of work done to it, it seems like, with every new release. And I love that. And to me, that is a good example of why they are trying to say that there are two whole areas of the watch dedicated to health stuff, because I don't know if you would call Breathe living an active life,
right,
but you certainly would call Breathe managing your health. And I think that they're doing enough health stuff, including the ECG, that it does warrant it. Like, it's a pretty big deal,
yeah,
for making you a more healthy person, and not just like I'm going to go for a run once a day, but like I'm going to meditate. And if something bad happens to my heart, I'm going to know it immediately, which is very cool.
Yeah, it's true. They really mean business with this stuff. We could get into more of the heart features too, because there were actually three new capabilities introduced. One is a low heart rate notification, which they had last time added a high heart rate notification, like your heart rate is abnormally high and you're not exercising. That's an important thing to be warned about. They've added the same thing for low heart rate as well as irregular heart rate. And that all comes from the optical sensor that, you know, the basic kind of sensor that they've been using in the previous models. But now with this new ECG electrical sensor, you can do this detailed ECG. Like if you get one of these notifications, you can get a very high resolution readout of your heart rate and rhythm, and then it goes to the health app and is apparently like put into a PDF form that you could quickly send to a doctor. Alongside that announcement, they announced that they finally got FDA clearance in the US for Apple Watch, which they didn't say exactly what that means, but what I assume it means is that it makes it much more integrated with the healthcare system and the insurance system,
right,
so that you can use it for formal medical applications and like doctors can use it as part of treatment, which is pretty amazing because it's like a consumer thing. It's a personal everyday gadget, but it's also one that like really has serious positive implications for the health of everyone wearing it.
Yeah, I think that it's a great thing to have. They also added the ability for there to be fall detection.
Oh, yeah.
So it will call 911 if it thinks that you fell down a staircase or just down in general, I guess, which is interesting to me that they are working very hard to make tools like the accelerometer, I think that's what that would be, right? The accelerometer?
Yeah, there's a new accelerometer and gyroscope that's more, way more sensitive, which is what enabled them to do
so
it.
So they're figuring out ways to use these pieces of technology to save your life in case you take mm-hmm. a bad tumble. And I think that's really rad. I was actually talking with Christine, my wife, about how she loves that there's that feature where you can, what is it, double click or hold triple click or whatever it is, the button to...
For emergency, the emergency call thing? Yeah, I forget how to do it. I turned it off because I accidentally did it once when I was in an airport and it set off a whole bunch of really scary messages.
Well, we're both proving my point right now, which is we know that it exists, but we don't know how to use it. And Christine kind of felt the same way where she's like, that's a great feature, but I wish I actually knew like how to make it happen in an emergency and I don't, which I think is a fair criticism, although I think the way that you learn how to use that is it just is a feature for long enough that it becomes muscle memory. But Apple's taking it one step further and just saying, we'll call for you if we think something went bad, which I kind of dig.
Yeah.
It's taking the pressure off you as a human in an emergency and saying, I'm a piece of technology that can determine what just happened and I'll send your GPS location for you. And I think that we will hear some stories where that has saved a couple of lives.
For sure. The past year's stories have been like high heart rate notification saved people's lives. And now we're going to add multiple other kinds of heart rate notifications. And then add in on top of that, a more pervasive use of an LTE enabled watch, where now even people who are out in the middle of nowhere with only their watch, they're going to be reachable and the watch will reach out for them if they need help. It's pretty amazing.
Did you enroll in any of those tests that you could do easily, like a heart test?
I did the academic study. I don't really know what came of it. It just completed a few days ago, actually.
Yeah, mine did too. And I think that if you would have clicked a few buttons, it would have said, you're good. Thank you for being a good candidate and nothing to worry about on your part, which is what happened to me, which was fun.
Yep.
So you could enroll with the current generations of Apple Watch in a heart study that would just basically, as far as I understood it, send the heart data that the Apple Watch was collecting. And that was it, you know? And it was such a passive thing. It wasn't hard to enroll at all. And I thought that was really, really neat that you could do something so simply. And I imagine that as these things continue forward, the studies are going to grow. You know, the features are going to be even more helpful. There's a lot of good that can come out of this kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of those.
Friend of the show, Drew Brinig, had a tweet that I liked, which basically just said, Apple is now a health company.
Yeah.
And I agree wholeheartedly that this stuff that is coming out of the Apple Watch was so centered around not only health, but like healthcare, the health system, you know, making sure that you aren't in a situation where you might die. Those are all big things that this one little device is solving pretty well without any input from you. And I think that that's a remarkable shift for a company that's been making a quote unquote communication device as the primary thing for so long. And again, to go back to that, this thing is three things. Communication is one of three, and health is two of three. And I think there's a big shift there.
Yeah. And they don't even, I mean, connected, staying connected. Like, what does that even mean? Like, that almost is also related to the thing we were just describing, where like you can call 911 from the top of a mountain.
It's true.
Like it's all kind of about like keeping you well, you know, it's like they don't even use this sort of more technical sides of communication to sell the device anymore. Now it's about connection, which is still like a remarkably humanistic application.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not for Apple. Like that's what they've always talked a good game about that. But all three of these areas that they're pushing this device on are human centric areas that are only merely supported by the major technological advancements.
That's interesting. I see that you moved right on by the new fire and water watch faces.
I have
faces.
Actually been wanting to get back to
that. Okay, yeah. I'm assuming you're not impressed.
Well, I mean, I'm impressed with... Here's what I would assume. So there's three other new watch faces. The fire face, the water face, and the vapor face.
Vape up.
And what I would imagine they would say about those is that they've modeled the actual physics of how water and fire and vapor would behave in that physical space of like a little watch face on your wrist.
Right.
Very realistically. It's cool looking. I'll grant you that. But I don't think I'm ever going to use it. Maybe I'll try it once.
I just don't like the fire one. To me, looked particularly ridiculous. Like at least with the planets one that they already have, I use that one because it's a very cool way of visually displaying what time it is, because you can see when sunset is coming and whether it's light or dark outside, or you know, like it matches what's going on around you. I think that's cool. Just having like my watch be on fire doesn't really appeal to me that much.
Yeah, these are very similar to the, I think it was butterflies and there was another one that I can't recall anymore.
Jellyfish.
Yeah, those faces, yeah. Where it's all black and this beautiful thing wipes across the face and then it's gone. And I kind of feel like what Apple has done with their faces ever since the inception of the Apple Watch is they've made utility faces and vanity faces.
Sure.
The vanity faces have no room for complications. The timepiece itself is very simple, and that's it. You know, it's just a way for you to look at this thing that looks really pretty for a second and then put it back down.
Yeah.
And I think that the majority of people who own Apple Watches do not use those, because one of the reasons that the Apple Watch is so helpful is because of its utility.
Yep.
And so even people that prefer something beautiful probably find themselves trending towards more utility-oriented faces than these, because they get old kind of quick. But I understand why they have them, because when you go and look at it at the Apple Store and you put an Apple Watch on, it is much more fantastical to have the body of water streaming across the Apple Watch face as opposed to a bunch of utilities that you don't have any really understanding of in the moment. But I don't think I'll be using them. I don't think you'll be using them. Just like I am not using the Toy Story faces or the Mickey faces right. Or any other ones that already exist.
Yes, I forget about those. There's one other notable thing about the watch, which is that even though it's thinner, it's advertising the same battery life that Series 3 gets, which they call 18 hours. I guess I'm mostly getting about 18 hours of battery life out of it. Depends how much of the cellular I'm using. But the other thing it really depends on is how much of a workout you're doing. And so now they've extended the workout battery lifetime to 6 hours, which definitely would kill this watch if I were to leave a workout running for 6 hours.
I think they said 6 hours outdoors, which I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I'm assuming that the GPS tracking is more, complicated doing that outdoors than indoors.
Oh, I wonder actually if that means cellular too.
Yeah.
Because that actually is really the major battery drain that I've been able to, like if I go without the phone, I don't think this watch would last 6 hours without my phone currently, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was a leap in capabilities they were able to make this time, especially with the more permeable, more radio permeable case, because I think that my understanding of how the radios drain the batteries of your devices, if they've got a poor connection, they work harder. And so having better signal actually gives you better battery life. And that would be true on your phone too. Cellular or Wi-Fi, I think.
It's been a long time since I've had battery issues with my Apple Watch. I couldn't tell you the last time that it died on me, and I do not charge it very well.
Yeah, it did actually die on me the other day, but that's because I went an entire day without my phone. And it lasted from about 9 a.m. to about 6 p.m. just on cellular. And that actually is a lot longer, but I wasn't doing workouts or anything. So that's really what kills it. So they're saying they extended the workout battery life of the watch, even though they made it thinner.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So that's Apple Watch Series 4. It is available for order this Friday, September 14th. And then becomes available the following Friday, September 21st. And watchOS 5 ships Monday of the week, of the coming week, September 17th. And I am stoked for that.
Yeah, the one beta I did not succumb to.
Yeah.
I'm still running the old watchOS on my watch, which I think is a very good idea. I don't think that you should run that beta.
No, definitely. There's a reason they didn't make a public beta version.
Yeah. Are you going to get one of these?
At the moment, I am still not going to, but here's the thing. We didn't mention the fact that this one also comes in shiny gold, which the iPhone we're about to talk about also does. And I have a feeling that I might be susceptible to how that looks.
Really?
That's the only thing that's going to push me over. I'll be honest. Like I really don't see any, I don't feel any need to replace the Series 3 that I have. It would only be just to have the new shiny if I were to replace it. And I don't usually go for that. I usually go for it as soon as I usually wait until there's something lacking or something that's bothering me before I replace the device. And usually I say, because I don't want to be committed to that. But I really love the Series 3, and I also know that the Series 5 is, you know, like I don't want to get a new watch every year, you know.
Yeah.
I went from Series 0 to Series 3, which was a 2-year gap, right? Because 1 and 2 came out at the same time.
Right.
And then 3. So currently this is my pattern, would be to wait another year to see what happens next time. Since there's not a thing wrong with my Series 3, I don't think I'm going to do it. But I leave myself open to being convinced.
Should I get a LTE Apple Watch? I'm still so confused, yes. John.
Yes. Yes, you should. Yes. You should.
I have heard no good cases about why LTE on the watch is good, except from you. Every other case I've heard sounds silly, and I'm like, I don't need any of that. But you have a way.
But what?
You have a way of talking about the cellular service and making it sound really appealing and relaxing and beautiful, and it makes me want it. But then I like go back into my normal world, and I'm like, I'm never without my phone. I don't know why I would need cell service on a watch, but maybe I do. I don't know. I feel very confused about it.
I love not having my phone with me. It feels so good to not have my phone with me. And I was already doing that even when I didn't have service on my watch. But having it makes it just all the more relaxing because, like, I can still get calls and messages and send them. One other thing that I would say about, like, from the perspective of people who, like, sit and think about this, like you and me, there's an additional layer to that that I find really compelling, which is studying what kinds of mobile computing you do, like in the real world, when you have those constraints. And it's more than you think. Like phone calls, text messages, email, navigation. There's a handful of things that really were the most amazing things that the iPhone brought into our lives that are, I mean, other than web browsing, it's not like you can't get information. You can still get information from maps. So like if you need to see when something near you is open, like you can look that up. And I'm finding it perfectly adequate. Oh, taking notes, audio or text notes, you know, using Drafts or just press record. The fact that they didn't get voice memos into watchOS 5 is a huge bummer, but that's okay because just press record exists. And the fact that they don't have notes is also fine because Drafts exists. You know, taking reminders, like all of these things are possible without a phone. And it's so much of the capabilities of the iPhone that like it's really only the time wasting ones that aren't available.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can cancel your plan, you know, if you aren't using it, cancel your plan. But like, I really, really, this is more of a thing. Like I never went for the iPad with LTE. Like that was a situation where I was like, I'm never going to have an iPad without a phone. Like, why would I want that? And people say, oh, it's just, you know, easier, or you can get a different provider and then you can be sure you're going to have data, whatever. So like always get cellular iPads. You can always cancel your plan is what people would say. That never worked on me, but this does, because there's a new way of being in the world as a computer user that's made possible by having a watch that connects you to everything else without any of the traps of having a phone. Now, as I'm saying this, it's occurring to me what the difference is between you and me, and it's a difference in how badly we need to have a camera on us,
right,
at any time.
I do love that camera.
That probably does like motivate you to bring your phone with you everywhere, doesn't it?
It does. It's a big part of it, to be sure. But an interesting thing is if I had a phone on my wrist, if I would be more motivated to not bring a iPhone and just bring a DSLR.
Ah.
Because that's actually kind of a cool idea. I'm currently on vacation. I am recording this from a remote location. Mm-hmm. And I have had a few instances where I'm going to be gone for an hour or two, and I don't want to take a big bag. And if I do take a big bag, I know I'm going to be like setting it somewhere and walking away, like I was at the beach, you know. And you kind of have to know, like, you're going to be in the water. So whatever you bring with you, it's not actually going to be with you. So you might as well limit that amount of things as low as possible. Mm-hmm. So I had to decide, do I bring my camera? Do I bring my iPhone? Do I bring this? Do I bring that? And I just settled on bringing my watch and my phone.
Nice.
And I wonder if in instances in the future, if I had a LTE watch, if I would settle instead on bringing just my watch and my actual camera. And if it can get me to do that, that's pretty interesting because I don't really need my phone for anything mm-hmm. besides the random text message I need to respond to and a camera.
Yep.
And if I could respond to that random text message on my watch and have a nicer camera on me, that's a pretty interesting proposition.
Yeah, man. I implore you to get an LTE watch and at least try this experience, and you can, and like worst comes to worst, you cancel your plan and it's the same watch except for a little red ring. And you know, it was a much bigger hit to your fashion sense to get an LTE watch last time.
It was,
and not want to use it. It's not a big deal this time. I want you to try it so we can talk about it. You know what we could do? Even we could like go a whole day each to like the same day, only using our watches without using our phones, and we could be communicating the whole time and we could really try it out and we could talk about what that was like.
I could be convinced of this, and I think I will probably be convinced of this. I'm assuming that the data plan is like $10 a month or $5 a month or something like that.
It's around 10. It should be 5. It should be 0. It should be the same data as your phone.
Right.
But it does cost around 10 bucks a month. But I found that to be worth it.
Yeah.
Like, not just like I don't notice it. Like, I'm glad I have cell service on my watch on a regular basis.
Mm.
Even if I'm just leaving my phone inside and going down the street to the post office, like, it's probably where I use the cell data other than the morning workout. Like, that's probably the next highest usage is just like short walks to places where I don't need to bring my phone. There's the kosher grocery store down the street from my house now takes Apple Pay. And I often go buy stuff at the grocery store without a phone or a wallet. And it's just a very good future. It's a future that I really, really like.
There is a moment in my life that I would love to not have a watch that I would love to not have a phone. That happens every day. And that's the everyday hour that I spend at the gym. I really wish I could just leave my phone in my car. But I listen to podcasts and I do use an app to like run the workout. Which would not be very easy to do unless I found an actual app on the watch that would let me do that. And that seems kind of cumbersome. But that besides, I mean, in a perfect world, I would leave my phone out of my pocket because it's the biggest thing in my pocket. I bring in my AirPods, my Apple Watch on my wrist, my iPhone, and my keys. And if I could get rid of that iPhone, I would be very happy because I've come pretty close to doing some damage to that iPhone because a gym is not an incredibly screen-friendly environment. So, yeah, I mean, I might even try that of just running some sets with just my Apple Watch if I can run some podcasts through it.
Which you can.
So,
yeah.
Okay. All right. This might be enough for me.
It won't even be long, I bet, before your watch gets rid of your phone and your keys when you go to the gym.
Oh my gosh, I would be so happy about that. I mean, my keys is my car key. That's the only key in the world that I have. And as soon as that becomes an app, I will never have a key in my pocket again.
Yep, I'm so psyched for that too. But speaking of things in your pockets, we got to talk about the iPhone. As leaked, there are two new classes of iPhone. The iPhone XS and the iPhone XR. I have no idea what R stands for. If they had called it 10C, that would have made a lot more sense.
Although I don't know what C stands for.
I thought it stood for colors.
Oh, interesting.
But the thing is, the iPhone 5C was a plastic phone. This is like much closer to the high end, I would say, than that one was. So maybe they needed something different.
Right.
But anyway, let's talk about them in order. The iPhone XS is the iterative improvement to the iPhone X that we, I think, all expected even right away when the 10 came out.
Right.
The one new exterior appearance is this gold that we mentioned, which I'm definitely getting.
Which I hear was planned for the iPhone 10 and like didn't work out for some reason or the other. So here it is a year later.
I heard that too. And it was in the patent or something. And I wonder, or the FCC documents or whatever it was. It's either that it was planned and they didn't get to it, or they decided to hold it until the iteration right. came out so that they could have something new to show, or they were always going to do that and they didn't want it to leak ahead of time, even though they would later leak the entire phone by accident.
Whoops.
So what's new? It's got new glass, which is the most durable ever, which is good because there's tons of glass on this phone.
Yeah.
It's protected in deeper water, 2 meters of water up to 30 minutes. That's pretty good. They touted the display, the Super Retina display, as new, but I actually couldn't figure out what was new relative to the 10. It's the same 458 pixels per inch. It's the same 2046 by 1125 display. So I don't know what they changed to make it Super Retina, or what did they say Super Retina last year too?
I think they might have said Super Retina last year, but either way, it sure is a screen.
Well, it's a crazy good screen, so maybe they didn't need to change anything. The other model of the iPhone XS class is the iPhone XS Max, which is a 6.5-inch screen, 2688 by 1242, with the same pixels per inch as the small one. So it's like the same screen, but cut a little bigger. And they explained the Max suffix, which I think sounds ridiculous, but I'm sure we'll get used to it. They explained it because it's bigger than Plus. The display of the regular XS is the size of a Plus phone, which is a phone size that we know well. The 6.5-inch phone is bigger than a Plus. So, of course, it's not just the XS Plus. It's a bigger... It's a Plus. Plus is an iPhone form factor that we've gotten used to, and this is bigger. So they had to come up with something. It makes some amount of sense. It's just kind of ugly as a name.
In the way of thinking about it, that makes sense for people who have had the iPhone 7s and 8s, is that the iPhone 10 is the size of the screen of the 8 Plus, right?
Yeah, I think it's the from the bottom of the chin to the top of the screen.
Yeah, and then the 10S Max is the size of the entire Plus, but the entire thing is basically a screen. I mean, you know, yeah. Obviously I'm simplifying it a little bit. But that's kind of the way to think about it. This yep. device is not that different in shape as the 8 Plus.
Right, exactly. Though the case is very different.
Right.
And like it right. feels very different. But yeah, so it's like as far as the physical size of an Apple thing in your hand, it's going to be something that doesn't seem like alien and huge, but it is much more screen than a phone has ever provided.
It's a lot of screen, man.
Yes, it is. There's something kind of appealing to me about it, but I'm not going to get it. I'm going to get the regular one.
I think me too. I don't really think I need that.
Yeah.
I loved the Plus when I had the 7 Plus, I believe, because one, the camera was better than the normal 7. So that was a huge thing for me. And two, the screen was so significantly bigger, at least to me, that it made sense to give up some pocket space
sure.
for this massive device. But I love the size of the iPhone X. I love it so much. It fits in my pocket so well. And because the whole dang thing is a screen, I don't find myself needing more screen. That's true when I'm watching a movie. It's true when I'm reading a book. I don't think that there's any situation where I would want the screen to be larger. And I think that the trade-off of a larger screen equaling a larger device equaling a heavier pocket is not worth it to me.
Yep.
So this is probably the first... I mean, I think I've had a Plus device, every Plus device that came out since the beginning. So I think this is the first time that I will be opting out of the larger version of an iPhone. Which, by the way, I remember a few episodes ago when we talked about the inevitable next phones, you had said that you would not get the big one. And here you are. Living up to your word.
Yep.
Good job.
Thank you. I did want a Plus. Before the 10 was announced, I was like, I think I'm going to get a Plus next time. But to me, the 10 gains in screen size so much from what I've been used to right. that it's going to be enough.
Yeah.
And the Max is almost an in-between form factor for me. The one thing that I looked at in this keynote that looked somewhat compelling was in horizontal split view. It's like the first time that split view on the iPhone actually looks almost usable. If you turn it sideways, you can have like the menu sidebar on one side and the content on the other side, and there's like almost enough room now. But that's not a very common use case for me. And I think that really what I want this large screen for is reading. And you read on your 10 all the time, and it seems awesome. You send me screenshots, and I'm like, wow, look at all the words.
Even a year in, the futuristic feeling of an all-screen device has not worn off on me. I was always kind of in the mode before where I would try my best to like match the background of the screen to the actual material of the phone. So if I had like a black iPhone, I would read with a black background because it felt weird to be holding this rectangle of screen in this much bigger device. Mm-hmm. But like, I actually love contrasting the screen with the design of my phone. So I'll always use like a white background Kindle on this black rimmed device just because I think it looks so cool. And because I feel so happy holding it in my hand, and I feel like there's so much information in this little tiny device. So I think for the first time, I think that the smallness is playing to one of the advantages of the iPhone X. And for people that just want a bigger screen, there's the bigger screen device. But as far as I could tell, there was nothing that you really gained from having the Max.
No, that's one new thing here. With like the Plus always had better features. They had better cameras, and you know, like there were things about the Plus that were better than the regular. But these are the same phone, you just pick medium or large.
The battery seemed to be slightly better for the bigger device.
Yeah,
but that was it.
Sure.
And that's not enough for me, so I'm thankful actually that Apple is allowing me to take the small device and feel like I'm still getting the best product.
Yep. So they've improved the secure enclave to make it faster. So Face ID is better. That's not surprising. The new A12 Bionic system seems incredibly improved from the 10. It's the first 7-nanometer chip in a smartphone. It's 50% faster than the iPhone 10, which is insane. The neural engine has gone from 2 to 8 cores, which enables it to do this like neural network machine learning stuff on the fly. Like when the camera's open, it can like actively be learning what's in the image. And there's a lot of stuff about that in the camera section. And so just one way of comparing it that they used is that the A11 could do 600 billion operations per second and the A12 can do 5 trillion operations, which is just, it's an order of magnitude more. It's an unbelievable improvement. And then the one thing that really matters to me about that is that it makes it able to address twice as much internal storage. So now you can get a 512 gigabyte phone. And if you think for a second that I'm not going to do that, you do not know me very well. I'm going to get 512 gigabytes of iPhone, and I'm going to fit every song ever recorded onto my phone locally and never stream.
What size do you have right now?
I have the 256, and it's full.
Okay. I have the 64. I don't know what you're doing with all that space. I have 3 gigs
free. I'm putting songs on it. That's what I'm doing.
I have noticed that I like scroll back a week and my photos have all been uploaded to the cloud and are no longer on my phone. Uh-huh. And that's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
So I think I'll probably get will the middle be 256 now? Is that what the middle will be?
Yeah. I believe it's 128, 256, 512 now. That was my maybe wishful recollection.
Yeah.
If you check and I'm wrong, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
In any case,
I would be sad.
I'm not going to get 512 gigabytes on my iPhone. I don't even know how many I have on my iPad Pro. Let's actually look. It's right here.
I have 512.
I have 256.
Yeah.
I do not need all of, and I edit these podcasts on the iPad. I don't know what the heck you're doing with all that space. I guess you did tell me.
All of recorded music history on my devices, okay. On all of my devices.
All right. Yeah. I guess that's fair then. You seem to know exactly what you're doing.
Yes, I do. And I also just always want all of the storage anyway. Like I just, who knows? So for a rainy day.
I do hate to break it to you, but Apple's still playing the cheapskate game, and it's 64, 256, and 512. So
thank you for checking. I regret the error for thinking that Apple might be generous.
Yeah. That's not happening with flash storage for a good while, I don't think. But no. I'll probably get 256, and I know what you'll be getting, 512.
Then they moved to the sort of demo section. As usual. And as much as I want to hate that every time, they always do manage to impress me to some extent. They threw in one stat as a preview of 30% faster app launching, which sounds great. And then they talked about how much faster all the graphics stuff got. And The real-time machine learning thing, they went into more detail. Core ML now runs 9 times faster. They made unbelievable improvements in the performance of all of this really advanced stuff, and they use less battery while doing it. And so their story is this cracks open the possibility of really like console quality, amazing first person action games with like reflective objects all over the place and stuff. There was an AR basketball training app called Home Court that they demoed that was really impressive, where it's just a phone like watching a person shooting baskets and like doing basketball drills and measuring their performance in real time and like tracking their body and the ball and counting like shots they made and shots they missed, all just from an iPhone without any sensors anywhere. It's all just processing the image through the camera. And then they updated arcade gaming by showing a Galaga demo, where this is the first time that like empty tabletop game demo that they've done has ever looked fun to me.
It did look pretty fun.
All the ones that they've done in the past where it's just like stuff on the table and you have to zoom in on to the stuff on the table with your phone to like see what's happening, that all looks really dumb to me. I would never play that game. But taking an arcade game like Galaga, where there's just stuff streaming at you and you just have to get it and shoot it before it hits you, and making that into a 3D thing that you can then play with other people, that looks super fun. Like, I can imagine that being the new arcade game dynamic. Like, why stand around a console? Because you can have the ships flying around the room together. And that looks fun. What can I say?
I have to admit to being susceptible to this because I love Galaga so much.
Yeah.
So if it would have been any other game, I don't think I would have liked it as much, but they brought Galaga out on stage and I had to be happy about it. So
sure.
I think I'll download whatever this is.
So then they went to the camera section. There's a new sensor. I believe 12 megapixels is the resolution of the 10 also, but the sensor is now new.
New and improved. Yeah.
Both sensors, that is the wide and the telephoto ones. Then there's the true depth camera is twice as fast, 7 megapixels, the front facing one. And now with all of this neural networking stuff that can happen in real time, the image signal processing can do that on the fly and do a whole bunch of new photo things, some of which are like impossible on any other kind of, like if your camera isn't also a supercomputer, you can't do this stuff, and the iPhone now can. The first one they mentioned is Smart HDR, which I think I understood. Basically, what I understood them to be saying is that it snaps a whole bunch of things at once and stitches them together. And it's not just the dynamic range of the image, but it's also like the shapes and things like that to make sure that like if something's in motion, you can still do an HDR image of it because it's also like tracking the movement of the stuff in the image, not just the lights and colors, right?
Right.
So that's cool because HDR pictures can look really blurry and ghosty and weird if there's like too much action. So this is using some of that real-time machine learning stuff to track it and adjust for it. And now the one that I thought was super cool is there's a new slider for editing a photo after the fact for depth, which lets you adjust the depth of field of an image after the fact, which is the thing that like you couldn't do before, because the software that they created to like to do portrait mode that like does this super detailed mapping of the depth of field, and then you can and then adjusts like what it looks like in software, you can now control that on photos. And I think that's amazing. You have a problem with it. Is it a craft problem? Is it like this butchers photography? What is your problem with that?
No. Yeah. So I mentioned to you during the keynote that even though that's cool, I have a problem with it and I'm not super into it. And first of all, I'll say that's rad. And you could do it before. You just had to download a third-party app to do it. So there were a few apps that would let you play around with the background of these portrait mode photos and do things like decrease the blur or increase the blur or change the bokeh, which is cool. And now they're bringing that right into the app, which is great because all of those third-party apps had the problem that they were super technical and not at all beautiful, and they were very hard to understand. And Apple's implementation of it is, of course, masterclass and looks great and is going to be very easy. My problem with this kind of stuff is that I don't use portrait mode that often because you don't know exactly what you're going to get with portrait mode, even a few years into it. And so I always feel like The portrait mode photos are just a little too blurry, just a little too messed up. The background is just a little off, where I could just take a photo with the regular modes. And I often shoot in 2X because I love the 50 millimeter feeling of shooting with that lens in particular. But I wish that all of this stuff was being taken care of all at once. And maybe what I'll find is that with this new ability to like just get rid of the portrait mode stuff, that I'll feel more comfortable with it. Because I could see a few situations where I say, oh, it didn't nail the background, but if I take it to a really high aperture, it still looks really nice. I don't know. Mm. But I'm just wishing that Apple would find a way to essentially let you choose to have a portrait mode photo or not a portrait mode photo without you having to figure all of that out before you set the shot up, if that makes sense.
Well, it sounds almost like this slider kind of gets rid of the need for a mode because they're capturing the depth of field data anyway, so you can just adjust it after.
I guess. I literally just pulled out my phone right now and took a photo in portrait mode and took a photo in 2x. And the photo in 2x looks so much better to me than the photo in portrait mode. And the photo in portrait mode loses the ability for the photo to be a live photo, which I do love. I actually really enjoy the live photo stuff. Mm-hmm. I just wish that part of what I like in photography is not having to make a bunch of choices up front. And I still feel like taking really good photos on the iPhone, you have to do a lot of thinking before you take the shot. And yeah. I'm wanting that not to be true anymore. That being said, you know, if I am taking a literal portrait of somebody, which I do understand is the name, you know, it's assuming that I am in a beautiful location with a person and I want to take their portrait. It's not so hard to make the decision between portrait mode or non-portrait mode. But I'm just saying I find myself almost never using portrait mode, and I feel like I'm the person that it should be for. Mm-hmm. So I want to see some changes, I guess. And I'm sure that they'll be there as soon as the technology allows them to be there.
Yep. It's really amazing how fast they're moving with this stuff.
It is. And I think that this is good. I mean, one of the things that's been pretty common to me is looking at people's feeds and seeing some portrait photos that they've used where it just looks unrealistic. And I think that you know what looks realistic and not, but you're happier to have this photo that looks slightly beautiful, even if it doesn't look quite right. And now you'll be able to slide that back into realism a little bit. And I think most people will. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that that exists. I think that's cool.
Yeah. Even if that's all it does, if it makes it adjustable so you can make your portrait mode photos look a little less fake, like, that's a great thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Then they talked about the SIM stuff. This is cool. The iPhone is capable of dual SIM use for the first time, which is even going to have an indicator on the incoming call screen about which line the call is coming in on. And you can name them whatever you want. Oh. So, like, it's, you know, you can call it, like, personal or work or whatever.
That's nice.
And so you can really use two phone numbers on the phone at once without thinking about it. This is also good for international travel. I traveled in Japan for a while and I needed to use my home phone number because it was like the two-factor authentication thing for a lot of important stuff, like including my bank.
Interesting.
So I couldn't get a new SIM. What I ended up doing to work around that problem was just using Wi-Fi calling if I needed to call somebody or something. Like, on Wi-Fi it still worked internationally without being on cellular, and I thought that was as cool as it gets because they have Wi-Fi everywhere in Japan. But now you can keep your phone, you can keep your number working, and you can add another number so that you can have like a local plan. Actually, living in Israel was the best example of this for me. I got a second iPhone, like an old iPhone that I used for my home number to receive two-factor authentication texts and stuff like that. And I put a local SIM in my real phone. And now that's not necessary because you can have dual SIM. And this is where they snuck in the fact that they're putting an eSIM in the iPhone instead of in addition to a physical SIM slot. It sounds like there's a physical SIM slot as well as an eSIM, which sounds like a compromise because people think that when phones go fully eSIM, that like liberates us even more from the carriers because you can kind of switch whenever you want. You don't have to do that physical You don't have to get a physical SIM card anymore. You can just sort of scan a code and like there away you go. So now the iPhone has both. And in China, where they either couldn't technically or couldn't legally do eSIM, they made a special model of the phone that has a double physical SIM drawer. But for the phones that we'll get everywhere else, there will be a second SIM inside of the phone that's like purely virtual, which is what they have on the watch and have had on the cellular iPads for a while. But moving it to a phone is a big step.
I'm assuming that the best way of doing this, if you do want to do something like travel, is somehow get your normal most used plan on the eSIM, because I'm assuming that not every carrier is going to use eSIM, at least at first.
Right.
So yeah. I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Yeah. They listed a bunch of carriers that they're working with, and all the big American ones are among them. So yeah, that's exactly what I would expect, is that you will put your AT&T plan or whatever on the eSIM, and then you can pop whatever local SIM you want into the drawer.
Which is cool. I think that's really neat.
Yeah, that's a big one. So then they did a little run on environmental stuff. They brought Lisa Jackson out to talk about all of their materials stuff and how they're working to make Apple more environmentally sustainable. I don't really want to do their PR work for them and go through all this stuff because they're not there yet, you know, but like basically what they said is that we're getting a little bit better. We're using a few better materials and that they have goal. They did, I guess the one salient thing about this part was they stated explicitly the goal of having their products last longer, mm-hmm. which I think is important. I mean, it's an important PR statement for them because everybody thinks Apple makes their phones die on purpose, so you have to replace them, which has never been true and is ridiculous argument, because that's like that would militate against the whole thing Apple wants you to think about their phones, which is that you love them and want to buy them, not that they're cheap and awful. But they did state explicitly the goal of having the product last longer, and they added this element of like it being more environmentally sustainable to do that. So she mentioned the fact that iOS 12 goes all the way back to the iPhone 5S. It, like they haven't knocked off any iOS devices with this year's OS update, like they usually do, and they're proud of that. Not just because it will serve more people, but because it keeps you from throwing your phone away, and that is now a sustainability argument for them, which I think is a good point.
I have to say that the iPhone 10 is by far the most durable device I've ever had. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
I believe that they said something like they're even making the 10S out of more durable stuff.
Yeah, the best glass ever.
Best glass ever, but also like surgical grade steel is what they said.
Oh, the steel too. Yeah.
But I'm like looking at the edges of my iPhone 10. I don't use a case. I don't treat my phone particularly well. And it's like perfect. The glass hasn't been scratched.
Yeah.
And there's a little scuffing on the top, but that's it. So I think that they are for real, like doubling down on how well they make these things, because my iPhone's held up, man.
That's good to hear, because
you're in the market.
You know, yeah, I'm totally, totally in the market. So I believe that this is the same pricing as the 10. The 10S is starting at $999 for the base model. Is that what the basic one was?
Yep.
$9, $10, $11. And now the Max is $100 more, starting at $1099. The sizes are 64, 256, and 512. And so that's going to be an expensive phone mm-hmm, for me. Mm-hmm. And it's the same availability as the Watch Series 4.
Okay.
That's the iPhone XS. And then they did use the phrase one more, but they said it right away, one more iPhone.
Yeah.
To reach as many customers as they can with all their great stuff. That's exactly how people predicted they were going to pitch this phone.
Right.
And basically, it's not a new model. It's not a new strategy. But the iPhone XR added colors. It actually really makes, we knew that this phone existed, but once they showed it on all sides, it made a lot more sense to me. So the thing that's interesting is that it's a new size. It's a 6.1 inch screen.
Bigger than the iPhone 10, smaller than the iPhone 10 Max.
Yes. And bigger than the Plus phone also. So that's interesting to people, but it is smaller. It is physically smaller than a Plus. And it's 326 pixels per inch. So it's still like a retina display, but with a 1782 by 828 resolution. And they came up with a new name for it. a liquid retina display. It's the most advanced LCD ever in a smartphone. So that is to say, it's not just the same crappy iPhone screen from before moved onto a 10 style phone. It's a markedly better display than any previous iPhone other than the 10 has had. It's the best LCD. And so they did do some special work on this device to make it like better than the 8, you know? But it's not an OLED display like the other 10 models have, but it does have that same edge to edge design and the notch for the sensor and everything. So it looks like an iPhone 10, but the thing that I was saying about it making more sense once I saw the whole thing, it's aluminum, not steel, for the frame, and it has a glass back. So basically it's like the 8 chassis turned into a 10. So that really makes a lot. And like the sensor, the camera looks like that. The back looks, it looks like an 8 on the back. And so, and since the last year, the 8 was basically the same internally as the 10, but with a kind of older case style. Now they've blended the cases. So it's still that same phone with that same spirit that the 8 has, but they've moved it into the 10 line with the edge-to-edge display, which... I think they've done really nicely because I love the 8. I'm giving this 8 to my wife because she's using a 6S and it's getting a little tired. But I wouldn't replace this phone if she had a new phone. Like, I would stick with this until whatever they do next, the iPhone 11, or I really hope they stop numbering it after this. So, like, as nice as this 10 design with the steel and the glass looks, like, this aluminum and glass, like, it was already great
right
when they made the iPhone 8, and now they've given it the new screen. But they are also offering it in 6 colors: white, black, blue, coral, yellow, and product red. I think they're going to sell a lot of these.
Yeah, this is the phone that makes sense for the majority of the world. To be sure, like, it's priced lower. It had a great guts upgrade. Like, it has that A12 Bionic chip, I believe, that's in the 10S.
Oh, yeah. So it's not even the guts of the 10 anymore.
Yeah. So it's great.
It's the same thing they did last year. It's like the same phone in a less expensive case.
Yeah. So this is the phone that I would recommend the majority of people to get, unless you really, really, really care about cameras, or I guess you really, really care about stainless steel. Like, I don't know.
Well, and also it's big. It's bigger than the 10 or 10S physically.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, not by much,
but it is a little bigger. Yeah, sure.
So are you not interested in this phone? Are you interested in the iPhone XS over the XR?
I'm getting the nice one. I want the OLED screen for sure.
Yeah.
And I also think I want to see what life is like with great cameras. I do. This phone does appeal to me for sure.
As a colorful person?
Yeah, as a colorful person, exactly. And you know, the screen size, you know, with the... You know, this is my sort of reading needs. Like, I could imagine going in between. I really could imagine doing that, but I don't think I'm going to. I think that the higher pixel density and the OLED screen is really what I want. So I'm going to get the XS, but this is such a great alternative. And I think that it's going to do really well. It really is significantly less expensive.
Yes.
It's 64, 128, 256. Starts at $749. And the really amazing thing is that now the iPhone 7 is now $449, which is crazy. And the iPhone 8 is still available from $600. So it's $150 more than the 8. And it's $150 less than the XS,
mm-hmm.
which is that it's really compelling.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I even find myself compelled by it. I think that it's a pretty good thing. If I understand too, there's still some issues with OLED screens, not to my eyes, but I know people have said, oh, they're slightly less sharp than LED screens because of, I can't even remember, what is it, Pentile or something like that, the way that the actual pixels are displayed. So there's some thinking that this new 10R might actually technically be sharper and better looking than the 10.
Huh.
Obviously not the dark blacks and that kind of thing, but the actual sharpness, the way that text looks, might be a little better. I mean, I have been using the iPhone 10 for a year. I've been reading heavily on it for a year. I've never once thought the text looked bad. It looks amazing. You know, under a microscope and maybe to some very discerning eyes, the iPhone 10R has a lot going for it. And I think it's a really good phone that I think I would recommend the majority of people to get.
Yep. So yeah, the iPhone XR is available to order October 19th, Friday, and available October 26th, so a little bit later.
Which is interesting because last year, the 8 came out first, and then the 10 came out a month later. Wasn't that right?
Right.
So they've done a little swaparoo here and made the cheaper model available last, which do you think there's rationale behind that?
I don't think that that's actually a marketing thing. I think that they are concerned about supply constraints.
Yeah.
With the time, like I think ideally they would release them all at the same time,
yeah.
But they're concerned about being able to crank out enough. And certainly the demand for the 10 was intense, and they were very hard to get for a little while. And I would imagine the same thing is going to happen with the 10R relative to how many of them they're going to make, because I don't think, because, you know, Apple has proven that they're going to sell mostly the most expensive phone.
Right.
So they're going to make fewer of these, but I think that the demand is still going to be tighter on them. And I would imagine that's what it's about.
Now, the thing that struck me about this entire presentation is that I've become very accustomed to a 1-2 punch that Apple throws every year, which is they reveal a software update in June or July, and then they reveal the hardware at the end of the year, and they also reveal a new piece of the software that you didn't know about.
Mm.
You know, I think of Touch ID, I think of Apple Pay, all these things came on the tail end. So surprise, this software has this extra feature that you didn't know about.
Because it's got a hardware-related component, and the new hardware is needed to tell the story.
Exactly. And that didn't happen this year. And I didn't go back and look to see if that's ever not happened before, but there is nothing exceedingly compelling about this new iPhone if you were looking for that new feature, say Animoji last year.
Right.
It just is a slightly better phone, and maybe in many ways a much better phone. There's no gotcha, gotta have it item that this phone brings to the table and brings to iOS 12, which I find kind of strange. I don't know how I feel about that. I'm used to that, I think.
Well, the 10R is like a new screen size. It's also a low price phone, so like maybe it's less surprising not to have that there. You might argue that the dual SIM capabilities of the 10S are that new thing, and for some people it is as big a deal, if not bigger. It may not be a very big deal for most users, but that is a very significant development, and of course is needed. Like iOS 12 is needed to support the two line phone calls. Like that's not an iOS 11. So that's the one, if there is one. It's certainly not as flashy of a new feature like they tend to introduce in the S years, like 3D touch or what have you. In fact, that was removed from the 10R.
Right.
They mentioned that it doesn't have 3D touch, but they have a new feature called haptic touch instead, which where it clicks back at you like the trackpad on a Mac does, which I guess maybe they mean like you tap, like a tap is a tap, and if you hold a little longer it clicks, and that's sort of simulates the 3D touch experience. But whatever it is, they got rid of 3D touch, which I guess means like the real 3D touch that can tell that the screen is depressing slightly or your finger is pushing harder, however they do it.
Right.
There's no S feature except arguably the dual SIMs.
Yeah, which, I mean, I think that Apple's in a point now where they don't have to do that. iOS 12 itself is such a leap from iOS 11 that that's a great upgrade. And a phone that can do things 50% faster with a better camera is in itself a great upgrade for people who want to upgrade. And they've started slowly but surely rolling out the ability for Apple themselves to control the upgrade program, and that you can just hand your phone into Apple at the end of the year and get the new one through them instead of having to deal with a carrier that can bring up a lot of problems. So I don't think they feel this intense pressure to put some crazy new feature in every phone. I think that they have done something which they called uncompromising.
Yep.
And made a phone that was the best phone they could make this year. And here it is. And it's a pretty good phone. So I'm excited to have it. And I think that a lot of people who missed out on the iPhone X will be extremely happy with the iPhone XS. And now they have three different screen sizes to choose from and a couple of different pricing structures to choose from and even some colors to choose from. So, you know, anyone who's making the leap into what Apple sees as the future of iPhone, this new form factor, is in for a very, very good upgrade this year, no matter what phone they choose.
Yep. And it's really an interesting positioning now that we know what the XR is. Like, it's the present now. Like, this is the generation that says the future, last year's future is this year's present. The iPhone X is the present top of the iPhone line, and there's three iterations of it. Or, well, really two. There's two sizes of the fancy iteration and like one new size of the middle of the road. And, you know, I think what it sets up for next year is really mysterious. Like the whole 8 and 10 at the same time thing was perplexing last year. And, you know, where is the iPhone 9 if that is ever going to be a thing, which now we know it is not.
Right.
But now that we've gotten to this XS, XR position, I think it really leaves the possibilities open for what they're going to do after this. And, you know, my hope is that they're going to go to just iPhone and maybe iPhone and iPhone Pro or something like that to simplify the line, to get back to that beloved Steve Jobs matrix of simplicity of offerings. But I think that this clarifies it a lot. And especially since they're all compelling, there's no bad one. I think that the 2019 iPhone lineup is it's just in a very good place. I mean, you can imagine them getting rid of the LCD and then having three sizes of phone, and maybe they're going to go smaller too with the OLED once they can. I think it's kind of wide open. I'm glad they got out of, I mean, if you think about it, they're out of the number zone now. Like, they still have the 10, but like, it's significant that it's not a digit anymore, I think. And now they don't have to deal with the sort of baggage of like adding a number versus just tacking a letter on the end of a number. Like, what is that? Like, how significant? Like, is this a good enough update to merit a new number or not? You know, like, I hope they're getting out of that game.
We know that they were very happy to hold on to Mac OS X for a very long time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
so maybe we'll see ourselves in a similar position.
Yes. This design is the 10 design. And they'll, yeah, who knows? Anyway, here we are. 10, 10S, 10R, 10S Max. Way to go, Apple.
Yeah, not my favorite names ever, but some pretty good hardware.